Today's Teisho is case 60 in the Pienru, the Haikigan Roku, the Blue Rock Collection. Case 60 is entitled Umon's Staff Becomes a Dragon. Engo's Introduction. Buddhas and sentient beings are not, by nature, different. Rivers and your own self are all just the same. Why should they be separate and constitute two worlds? Even if you are well versed in Zen koans and know how to deal with them, if you stop there, everything is spoiled. If you do not stop, the whole world will be dissolved, with not a particle of it left behind. Now tell me, what does it mean to be well-versed in Zen koans? See the following. Umon held out his staff and said to the assembled monks, "The staff has transformed itself into a dragon and swallowed up the universe. Where are the mountains, the rivers, and the great world?" Secho's verse, "The staff has swallowed up the universe." Don't say peach blossoms float on the waters. The fish that gets its tail singed may fail to grasp the mist and clouds. The ones that lie with gills exposed need not lose heart. My verse is done, but do you really hear me? Only be carefree. Stand unwavering. Why so bewildered? 72 blows are not enough. I want to give you 150. Secho descended from the rostrum, waving his staff. A whole crowd ran away. Wow. Good thing he's not here. He wasn't kidding, right? So my staff has become a dragon, and he starts hitting all the students with his stick. So here we are, a beautiful day to our session, it's wonderful to be practicing with all of you, with each of you. Everybody's doing a wonderful job. This morning we had a deep Sashin sit. It's incomparable, right? It's possible to have, you know, it's very important to practice regularly on your own. If you don't practice regularly, Sashin is not likely to have the deepest impact, you know, not really likely to bear fruit. I've talked about this before, but in the Zen world, there are lots of people who don't practice regularly, and they come to Sashin once or twice a year. And that's like a very poor strategy, in my opinion. Because it's like trying to run a marathon without being properly trained or properly prepared. It's a little like trying to harvest a field when you haven't properly watered and weeded it. You know, it's very, very important to practice regularly. And then when you come to Sashin, something really outstanding and amazing can happen. So I know that all of you practice pretty regularly. Pretty much everybody here is at the Saturday sits very often, quite maybe every time. Almost everybody here comes to the Saturday sits almost every time, and I know that you're all practicing regularly. So this kind of an event can have deep resonance. And this morning I just thought this is really beautiful, this practice. You know, to come here and sit for a day and get tired and then get up the next day and just be deeply in Mushin, deeply in Mushin. That's just wonderful, wonderful. It's beyond words, right? That's the life of the man of Zen, the woman of Zen, is to spend a lot of your time in deep Mushin, deep wordless, deep wordless awareness. Yeah? Mind blank and dark as a cave. Yeah? And that's just wonderful. Of course, maybe this morning you didn't feel that way, you know? It's possible that you weren't sitting on the cushion with a mind blank and dark as a cave, you know? Maybe you had a lot of thoughts buzzing around in your head, yeah? And it's just possible that your legs hurt you and your back was tired and maybe you were dozing off, you know? And maybe you were just counting the seconds till the bell would ring. I love this koan because he's got that, let me see if I can find that line, which is so great. The fish that lie with gills exposed, right? Those are like fish who are up on land and they're just trying to survive, right? And I must say that I've had countless sits where I'm just trying, like a fish with gills exposed, right? Just trying to survive. Just trying to get through the next breath, right? Next breath, ring the bell. And it's possible that at 4:30 this morning, you woke up, you know, the alarm went, and you thought, why am I doing this? I could just go back to sleep. Everything would be so beautiful. You drag your ass in here, and you struggle, your legs hurt, and you think, yeah. And your mind is thinking about this and that, and get back to home. And it's, you're thinking of whatever, you know, a million different things. And basically, it's possible, I don't really think you would be here for 7 days if you felt this way all the time, but it's possible sometimes to feel that that you're far from achieving what you want to achieve. And even though you're here, you know, it may be a struggle, and it may not be this beautiful mind. But all the same, I think that you, how shall I put it? You know, even when we think, you know, the little mind is such an interesting thing. You know, it's so interesting because it worries about everything. It worries constantly. It's constantly trying to protect itself. It's constantly trying to be safe and secure. I don't know if you ever saw a movie. Years ago, I saw a movie which was called Black Robe. And it was about a French priest who went to live with the American Indians in the Great Lakes region. And I can't remember all the particulars of the plot, but they had to go somewhere, and there was a Indian man and his son, who agreed to help this priest go to their destination. The Indian man had a dream long ago in which he saw an island on a lake. And And basically, he saw the goddess of death on the island. She was a beautiful Indian woman with her face painted, and she had long pigtails and a dress made out of deer skin with bead work on it and moccasins. But her face was very pale, she put white makeup on it. And he kind of knew this might be the goddess of death, but he wasn't sure what it meant. And anyway, at the end of the movie, they come to an island which looks just like the island, he thinks anyway, it looks just like the island in his dream. And he knows he's going to die here. In fact, he does die there. And he says, if only I understood this dream. You know, he said, I wasn't destined to die until now. And he said, I think of all the battles I fought, where I was just cringing, you know, hiding behind a tree, hoping to survive. And he said, I could have just gone out there and, you know, kicked ass, you know, and I would have been a famous warrior, you know. All my life I've been afraid of dying, and the gods sent me this dream in which they told me where I was going to die. And he said, all this time I've been cowering and afraid, and I had nothing to be afraid of. I could have, you know, they could have shot at, none of their arrows would have killed me. I could have ridden my horse into the, you know, the people in North America were very warlike, very warrior culture. And so he could have had many victories that would have made him a famous chief. And so at the end of his life, he's very, it's kind of a sad movie all the way around. He's very disappointed because now he's going to die and see the maiden of death. And he realizes he's wasted his vision and he could have done something else with his life. So, I thought that scene was very poignant because basically we all sort of live that way, don't we? I mean, the thing is, we're so afraid of failing, of not fulfilling our dreams, of being nobody and going nowhere, you know? I mean, in our culture, we don't necessarily become famous by being a great warrior, although that's increasingly becoming something that young men aspire to, and even young women in our culture, is to be a warrior. But, we have various ways of defining success. And we're all, many people, maybe everybody, is, you know, afraid of not being successful, not realizing their vision. And we, you know, how many nights do we lie in bed tossing and turning or troubled? I myself have spent many days like that, you know. I remember that when I was starting out at the graduate school, I'd been out of school for a number of years, and I was so afraid that I was going to get into graduate school and just fail out. And I had sort of an irrational fear that I wanted so much not to be a failure. And I had been traveling around the country, doing a lot of jobs that were not distinguished jobs. I mean, moving furniture was one of my jobs, and I enjoyed moving furniture, actually. I worked in restaurants, and I enjoyed working in restaurants. But at some point, I was sort of always just above minimum wage, and I realized I have to do something with my life. And so I thought, well, I'll go back to graduate school. But I was so afraid of failing out. And when I look back over my life, I realize I was so anxious so often, for no reason, you know, that I was sort of like afraid of my shadow, And I could have just had a better time, really. You know, I was afraid maybe that if I just loosened up a little bit, something bad would happen, or I wouldn't realize my goals. But I realize now that I could have been more carefree about life. You know, could have been a lot more carefree. But that anxiety was always there. And I think that this is why some people become religious, you know. In other words, you know, I think people go to church or go to a temple because sometimes they have this anxiety, you know, about life, and they want to be reassured that somebody's looking out for them, yeah? That it's all going to work out okay. And so, you know, people might go to a church service or a mass or a temple, do puja at the temple, because they're trying to reassure themselves that the world is trustable. And actually, in a way, this is sort of what we're doing with Zen practice too, you know, actually, is trying to reassure ourselves that the world is trustable. And even Zen practice can create a kind of anxiety, you know, where you are worried you know, you're just not going to pass your koan. You're not where you should be. So even though people come to sesshin trying to free themselves from fear or a sense of not being in the right place in life, you can create that all over again at sesshin. And you know, that happens in conventional religion too. You know, people, I think I would put it this way, people invented the idea of God to give them courage, you know. But basically, sometimes they can feel always unworthy or sinful and evil in the presence of God, you know. And that's a big problem. And it's possible to feel that way in your Zen practice too, I'm just not measuring up, you know. And a lot of Zen practice is trying to become an enlightened being, you know, trying to become an enlightened being, and that can create all kinds of obstacles and anxieties. Yeah? Another way, you know, let me put it this way. Somebody came into Dokusan some time ago and said, you know, I've been having these wonderful sits. My mind is really blank. And it occurred to me that my mind has been in this state a lot in my life. I just didn't notice it. And I thought that was such a wonderful statement, because it's absolutely true. You know, there is consciousness is fundamentally mushin, fundamentally mushin. Awareness is fundamentally mushin. That's like the ground floor of consciousness. And all the other forms of consciousness are like elaborations on mushin. Or you know, if you have a visible light and you put it, you hold up a prism, it breaks up, it breaks the unified light into colors, you know. But actually, all forms of consciousness are like refracted versions of mu. It's like breaking mu up into individual colors. Yeah? But when you put them all together again, they become mu. So this is really quite wonderful, you know, that at the root, the people are mu-shin. And in a certain sense, you know, you have to make an effort when you practice. If you don't make an effort, not much is going to happen. But the good news is that, you know, basically, you are a mu-shin. And that if you just sit on the cushion long enough, you're going to bump into mu-shin and start going to mu-shin more and more deeply. And it's literally a can't miss situation. It's like you can't miss. You know, it might take you a long time to bump into mu-shin, but of course everybody here has bumped into mu-shin. But it can take people a long time. I mean, I've met people who were working on the mu koan for 12 years. And it wasn't the case that they were working on the mu koan because the teacher thought their practice was deep. It was because they were very, very fearful people. Nevertheless, you know, the root of their consciousness was also mu-shin. Sooner or later, if you just go to you do regular practice, and you go to sashin, you're going to fall into mu-shin. And you may sit on the cushion and have all of these songs playing in your head, you know, or you may be thinking about how much you're going to earn when you get your law degree. Or you may be thinking about how to break down mercury, or how to compose a poem, you know. But sooner or later, if you just keep watching your breath, you're going to hit a mu-shin. And I just think that's amazing and wonderful. One of the things that people don't adequately appreciate is that we come to sashin thinking we're trying to achieve something, but already your big mind is telling you what to do. Now, really and truly, you know, your big mind, your little mind said this morning, why am I here? Why am I here? Why am I did I do this? Why do I keep doing this? I keep coming to sashini. And then I get up at 4:30 and think, why? See? But you know, there's another part of you that said, go to sashini, and you went. And that part of you is not necessarily accessible to your little mind. Right? When little mind looks, it doesn't see anything. But there's a part of you which is already, which is Buddha nature, which told you, go to sashin. Go to sashin. And you went. See, all the time, you know, people don't listen to Buddha nature. You know, Buddha nature says this, and they say, oh, I can't do that. You know, so-and-so wouldn't approve. You know, people go through many years like that. You know, I have a friend. He sits at the group up in Lebanon, New Jersey, and he's a Korean gentleman, and his wife is a very devout Christian. And let me just say, I'm not criticizing being Christian in any way, but She just did not approve of Zen or Buddhism. She thought it was a false religion. And her husband had grown up in the Korean culture where Buddhism was really almost exterminated. Buddhism was persecuted in Korea from about the 12th century on. And monks, according to the government created like a kind of like a caste system or social ranking system. And it put Buddhist monks at the bottom. So they're like the lowest of the low. And Buddhism survived in Korea barely until the 20th century, but it's really revived quite a bit. But anyway, this person, he wanted to practice Zen. But he was so afraid, you know, his family did not approve, and his wife strongly disapproved. But he finally couldn't not do it, you know. It's like the big voice in him told him, practice Zen. The big mind told him, and he feels better, you know. It creates waves in his life. Creates the conflicts in his life, but he has to do it. There's something in him that says, get up and do this, you know. So you know, probably coming to Sesshin also might have cost you something. Maybe you don't have to fight it out with your family or something like that, but you know, you lost wages, whatever. But something in you is telling you to do this. And you can trust that, 100%. You know, and a lot of Zen practice, you know, one way to think about Zen practice is that it's about determination, right? Determination. So you sit on the cushion and you think, I am not going to move till that bastard rings a bell, you know? Right? And Zen does indeed take determination, you know. But really, beyond determination, it's learning how to trust your big mind. You know, learning how to trust. I remember the first time I did two sits in a row without moving. You know, I would get through about 25 minutes and uncross my legs and just... I would see Genki Roshi and Webb Sensei sitting serenely without moving. And I just always kept thinking, I can never do that. And I'm just like, I couldn't do that. And how do they do that, you know? And you shouldn't, you know, you might not be ready to do it, but at some point I just had this impulse, right? It was like, I'm going to do it. And who knows why? You know, it's like big mind just says, do it. So you're sitting on the cushion and the bell rings and you think, you know, I'm not in agony. I don't have to stop. And then you think, but what happens if I get out there and then I'm in agony? I could be in agony for the whole sit. And you go through this, but at some point, you know, you can find it in your heart to just trust, you know? Say, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And it's like crossing over a raging river, right, on a little log. You just take one breath, another breath, still alive, still here, another breath. You know, then, you know, of course, at some point, you begin to feel a little pain in your leg. You think, oh, there's the pain. that you just go back to the breath, as you go back to move, you push your mind deeply into the breath and to move. And you do it again, and you do it again, again, and it's like you're crossing on a rope, yeah? And you don't want to fall. And you don't know if you can trust yourself. You don't know if you can trust the rope and so on. But you just keep going one breath at a time, and then you get to the end and you think, my God, I did it. That's amazing, I did it. Right? How did I do that? And I think this is sort of like the way Zen people live their lives. It's like we kind of go out on a rope, you know, and we're asking the universe to help us, you know. It's like a dare in the universe to help us, maybe, I don't know. And you just put your trust in the machine, in the breath, and in your true nature. And you know, sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, sometimes you get halfway across the river and you just fall off. You know, and fortunately, we don't get killed. You know, you just have to uncross your legs, or you know, you get up and it takes you a few minutes to get up because your legs are a little sore. But we're sort of developing ability to trust ourselves, and I don't mean our small self. You know, we really do have, you know. You do read these stories, right? I was talking to Ashish, who said he was coming to Sashin, and he was talking about how much Zen helps him, but how he doesn't ever know what the heck he's doing. You know? And I said, well, that's because it's not your conscious mind; it's the act that's it leading the way here. You know. And Ashish says, I believe that, because he's a scientist. And he said that sometimes he'll be working on a problem and he just can't solve it. It's just he'll sit there, and then he'll say, I'll go to sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, the solution is there. And I understand that exactly, you know. There's another part of the mind, which is it's not really just the unconscious. It's much bigger than like the idea of an unconscious. There's a mind that has no birth and no death, that experiences the world very, very differently. It's like connected to everything. But it can solve these problems that the little mind can't. And because we live so much in the little mind, we just don't believe that's possible, right? That's just a fairy tale. So you come to Sashin, though, because there's part of you that listens to big mind, and then it's all about learning how to empty yourself out and let big mind take over. It's all about letting go, yeah, letting go. And if you can do that, the most wonderful things happen. But it takes a while because we're all afraid of letting go. You know, everybody holds back a little bit. You know, it's hard to give up on the small self. But, you know, if you just sit there long enough, you return to your true nature, your essential nature, which is Mushin. And if you stay in Mushin long enough, you're going to act in ways that are very pleasurable, very free and spontaneous. You know, Really, people have few moments in life when they're really at harmony with the world. They really feel at harmony with the world, the ordinary person. You know, most people worry from dawn till dusk. And most people feel very boxed in, I think. The idea of spontaneous joy, that kind of joy that comes when you feel that you're totally connected, that's quite rare. I mean, people spend millions of dollars on exotic vacations and all kinds of, I was thinking this morning that, people are constantly hungry for this kind of experience of connectedness, it's hard to believe this universe is really our home, I think, on some level. People are constantly trying to, I was thinking this morning how much I love to sit and how good it feels. And I was thinking about people who like use drugs or things like that, or alcohol, because it gives them a little taste of this, And I think people are constantly trying to connect to the world, but they don't quite know how. But I think this is a wonderful way to do it. So, if you can, if you want to think about Zen as a struggle, or conflict, or Mumon himself says, if you want to practice Zen, it's like walking up a mountain of swords in your bare feet. It's like, oh. But Mumon's not telling us the truth when he says that. That's actually not the best way to practice. There's a kind of natural practice where you just do your best and have patience. Try, but then have patience. Yeah? Just settle into Mushin. Just sort of try to settle into Mushin and enjoy that beautiful that feeling. I don't know how to describe it, but when you're in deep Mushin, it's like you're deep in something. Maybe it's like going down into the ground, like into a cave in the ground. And when you're in that cave, the temperature is, 72 degrees year-round, yeah? It's quiet, dark, it's comfortable, you're safe, yeah? And that you can feel above your head a million tons of earth, protecting you. And you know that nothing can shake this state. This is sort of how Mu feels. Moves a little bit like being at the bottom of the ocean, I think. It's like there's a million gallons or a billion gallons of water all around you. You can feel their heaviness, but they're holding you up. Yeah? And in this serene, this is so beautiful, this smooshing, so beautiful. Just, go down into that cave and stay there for a while. Go down to the bottom of the ocean and stay there for a while. Stay for a long time, And you will be so happy, so transformed. Mumon held up his staff and said to the assembled monks, "The staff has transformed itself into a dragon and swallowed up the universe." This just sounds like bullshit, doesn't it? But he's not talking about, he's talking about the experience that you have when you're in deep Mushin. And deep Mushin, literally everything disappears. Yeah? Everything disappears. When you're in deep Mushin, there's just very little consciousness of anything from time to time. Mind is blank and dark. There's a story about Hakuin Zenji, who was practicing Mushin very diligently. And he would even try to stay in Mushin when he was out on the road walking. And which is not as stupid as it sounds, because in those days the road was surrounded by fields, and if you couldn't really go off the road, it was down below the level of erosion had made the roads lower than the fields, so it was just like a tunnel almost, you know. So he was walking along the road, and he smashed right into a buffalo, water buffalo, that was coming the other way, is the famous story. When you're really in deep mushin, everything disappears. Everything disappears. And if you stay there long enough, the most wonderful thing is going to happen. You're going to become the dragon. And you'll be the dragon. So today, let's really practice in mushin. Let's go deeply into mushin. And trust mushin to answer your calling. Trust mushin to solve your problems. You can't solve your problems without it. Because actually, we don't ever solve our problems. People don't really understand this. If we get rid of our idea is that we're running out of gas. In New York City, at the turn of the century, at the turn of the 19th century, the dominant form of transportation was the horse. Yeah? Horse. This is true. New York used to, all the milk trucks, all the delivery, they all had, when my father was a little boy, there were still horses in some parts of the city. And when my grandfather was little, that's how everybody did everything, horses. Now, there were thousands of horses in New York City, and therefore, what? There were tons of horseshit. No, it was a huge problem. Practically everywhere you'd step in it day after day, horseshit was everywhere. And so there was like a contingent of people New York had to pay for who would just carted up all those horseshits and put them in wagons and took them out of the city, And it was a huge problem, and it caused actually a lot of pollution, believe it or not. So guess what? We have a new solution. It's called a car. It runs on gas. No horse shit, right? Perfect, right? Okay. So 100 years later, guess what? Global warming, right? So we're going to get rid of the car. I've got an idea. Nuclear energy. No pollution. Perfect, right? But we keep thinking at some point we're going to solve this problem, but actually all you do is you change your problems, right? You change your problems. This problem or this problem. You're getting rid of this problem, and here's the new problem. This is how it really is. So there's a kind of a mind that says, if this happens, everything will be okay. All problems will be gone, but that never, personally, that never happens. Right? I would say, and it never happens to society. Those kinds of answers aren't real. But there's another way of approaching your problem, and that is using your big mind. And this is the mind that is connected to everything. That feels deeply connected to everything. And there is no gain and no loss, no right and no wrong in this mind. And my personal feeling is that this is the only way to, if you're interested in solving your problems, this is the way to solve your problems, by changing the way you look at everything. So today, please, let's go deeply into Mushin. Deeply into, don't worry about anything but being present with Mushin. And then let's see what arises, okay? And whatever arises is going to be wonderful.